And good morning. This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Monday, February 22nd. I'm Roz Brown. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio.
Many turtles washed up on South Padre Island.
Sure, climate change is harming plants, penguins, and polar bears, but it's harming people too.
After the murder of George Floyd last summer, it felt like it was well past time to really take a look in the mirror and see what we could do about this.
I just kept seeing records falling everywhere. I kept seeing all these just crazy things that were going on.
Those are some of the voices you'll hear on today's magazine. Coming up, from Boulder's uncomfortable sub-zero temperatures to the catastrophic snowstorm and its aftermath for residents of Texas, what's climate change mean for the future? We'll have more ahead. Then, how can Boulder County become a more inclusive community through changes in law and public policy? We'll tell you how to join a conversation about that topic this week. Then we'll get a preview of this afternoon's Metro show airing at 3 p.m. on KGNU when Miriam Schiff talks to civil rights activist and minister Glenda Strong Robinson as we continue our recognition of Black History Month. At 8:30 this morning, or 8:35, on a public affair hosted by Community Foundation Boulder County, it's an interview with the authors of a new national study that puts a spotlight on Boulder County's local news and information ecosystem. A report finds that we have a dynamic landscape rich with a variety of English language for-profit news sites, but not much in the way of nonprofit, radio, television, or Spanish language offerings. But first this morning, let's take a look at headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
United Airlines has grounded some of its Boeing 777 airplanes after one of them experienced an engine failure and spewed debris over Broomfield Saturday afternoon. The decision came as the Federal Aviation Administration plans to order increased safety inspections for the type of engines involved. The engine failure on United Flight 328 happened just minutes after the Hawaii-bound flight took off from Denver International Airport. The plane returned to the airport and no one on it or on the ground was injured. But according to the Daily Camera, there have been reports of property damage. Broomfield police began receiving calls from residents early Saturday afternoon who said they thought a plane was falling from the sky. Debris fell over at least a mile, including on Commons Park. Authorities are asking anyone who finds debris not to touch it so it will stay intact for investigators. The city of Denver will take law enforcement officers out of actions to break up homeless encampments. In an exclusive story, Axios reports that Mayor Michael Hancock said they have seen through research across the country that obviously it heightens tensions when police move in first. Clashes between police and protesters armed with cell phone cameras have become the norm during homeless camp sweeps, with some confrontations turning violent. Hancock said he has directed his team to create a compassion or civilian corps to clean up tent cities instead of armed police officers. The team of trained professionals would warn people sleeping on the streets that campsites are illegal and connect them to the social services they need. Last month, a legal challenge prompted a federal judge to rule that city officials must give residents at least 7 days' advance notice. Service providers agree that the strategy to take police out of the equation is a welcome step and one that many advocates have been requesting for years. Mental health workers in Denver picketed on Saturday afternoon demanding better and more stable pay. Denver Right reports that employees of the nonprofit Mental Health Center of Denver said they're asking for a guaranteed pay scale that would make incomes more predictable year to year. The Service Employees International Union has been negotiating with the nonprofit since October. Counselors, job trainers, housing specialists, and others who are members of the union were due for raises in January, but the ongoing bargaining process had delayed their wage increases. Unionized workers haven't received any raises since the pandemic began, but their non-union colleagues have. The Mental Health Center operates 9 facilities in Denver, and its workers staff the city's STAR pilot program, which removes police officers from the low-level 911 calls. The Boulder City Council is considering 2 candidates for the vacant city manager position. Kevin Jackson is the deputy city manager in Long Beach, California, and Nuria Rivera Vandermeid is the deputy city manager in Austin, Texas. The Daily Camera reports that the city manager administers policies set by the council. Jane Brodigam served in the position for 12 years until retiring October 30th. Boulder is hosting a forum from 6 to 7:30 Thursday for people to meet the 2 finalists. There will be an opportunity to ask questions and speak with the candidates in small breakout groups. A timeline for appointing a new city manager is not definite. Longmont City Council will meet in a closed virtual meeting tomorrow evening to discuss the city's legal options about pushing the Regional Transportation District to go forward with the Northwest Rail passenger train service. The Times Call reports that in January, council members indicated they might explore legal options if RTD does not agree to proceed with development and funding of at minimum a peak hours commuter rail service between Denver and Longmont. Council members have previously questioned whether RTD could be required to reimburse the community for taxes paid toward the project or otherwise forced to proceed with it. A report of an independent investigation into the death of Elijah McClain will be released today. McClain died in August of 2019 after an encounter with Aurora police officers and fire rescue first responders who subdued him with now banned restraints, including a ketamine injection and a carotid chokehold. Amid a swelling protest, council members announced in July the city would conduct an independent investigation. According to the Aurora Sentinel, the report into McClain's death will be released this morning, and a press conference with the investigators and police scheduled after. The investigation, which has been led by civil rights attorney Jonathan Smith, doesn't bring the possibility of criminal charges against police or first responders, but other ongoing investigations do. Smith's team is focused on a review of relevant policies, procedures, and practices on first responders, ketamine use, and use of force policies. The Aurora City Council will hold a virtual special meeting this evening on McClain's death. In the weather today, it will be mostly sunny with highs in the low to mid-50s and breezy with winds gusting up to 45 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny and windy with highs in the low 50s. Wednesday, we'll have cooler temperatures and a possibility of snow. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It's 8:11. You're listening to the Morning Magazine on KGNU. Well, across the U.S., the weather has been a series of extremes in the past 10 days or so. Jonathan Thompson is a journalist for the publication High Country News. He's also a weather geek and a little obsessed with climate change. That's why, for a recent story, he put together weather extremes we saw across the West in 2020, including what happened in Alamosa, Colorado on July 10th last year.
Alamosa, if people are familiar with it, that's one of the coldest places in the nation.
On July 10th last year, just a week after the 4th of July, the temperature in Alamosa dropped to 37 degrees Fahrenheit,
which was a record low for that day, for July 10th. And then it shot back up to 92 degrees on the same day. So almost 60 degrees difference in one day.
Thompson's recent article was entitled From Alaska to Wyoming, Evidence Shows the Climate is Off Kilter in the West.
One of the things that I've always bristled at is when people say, oh, this is an unprecedented year as far as temperature goes, or as far as precipitation goes, or as far as wildfires go, or whatever, because I'm also a history buff. I like looking back at the history of weather and the history of climate, and usually I can say it's not unprecedented. Look back in, 1879, and there was this huge wildfire and this huge drought and blah, blah, blah. And so usually I can do that. As the year dragged on, I just kept seeing records falling everywhere. I kept seeing all these just crazy things that were going on with the weather and the climate and wildfires and drought. So somewhere near the end of the year, I was like, I've got to go through and try to tally all this up and see, maybe it's not unprecedented. Maybe I'm just kind of imagining things, or maybe it's just the stuff that's been sensationalized. But as I went back through the records and started looking around, I realized that it really was kind of an unprecedented year.
After compiling data for the 12 western states, including Alaska, for his High Country News article, Thompson found the extreme temperature in Alamosa last July was not isolated.
Compiling data across that big of a region, and when it all kind of matches up, and when you have all of these records falling, it tells you that the climate is, in fact, changing. If you look back in history, you get these ups and these downs, you get these wild variations of climate and weather. And so you can't say that this is part of a trend. But starting really in February, you started seeing these crazy temperature records being shattered. Places like Lewistown, Montana hit 70 degrees Fahrenheit in February. And so you're way up north, in a place that should be really cold in February, and it's getting up to temperatures that they'd normally kind of see in the summer or in the spring. At the same time, California was super dry in February, the driest February on record, actually, in California. Alaska was super dry in the spring and warm. So even early on, you were seeing these high temperatures. Actually, Colorado had a pretty good winter. I mean, they had a normal kind of average winter as far as snowpack goes, basically. Normal is a relative term, but it was fairly close to average for the snowpack for most of the state. But then something weird happened come summer, and it started getting very warm. So the snow melted extremely quickly, earlier than it usually does in most places. And then Colorado, and a lot of Colorado, you normally have a monsoon come July, maybe August. You have a pretty good monsoon where you get these big Pacific storms that have a lot of moisture in them. Didn't get that in 2020, not in any significant way. And so it really just built up so that by the end of the summer, you were facing catastrophic situations as far as wildfires go.
Colorado wildfire season was not only its most severe on record in 2020, but most of the fires also burned far later in the year than normal. In mid-October, when Colorado's mountains would normally be covered with snow, the East Troublesome Fire west of Boulder, originating in Grand County, tore through high-elevation forests and homes to become the state's second-largest fire ever. But it was soon outdone, because the Cameron Peak Fire west of Fort Collins that started 2 months earlier is now Colorado's largest fire.
We are mostly experiencing extreme weather events on the hotter and wetter side.
That's Ed Myback, director of the Center for Climate Change Communication at George Mason University. He says our common experience of seeing so many floods and fires in recent years may explain why Texas could not imagine the threat of a catastrophic cold snap such as the one last week.
This is clearly an extreme weather event, right? Climate change makes extreme weather events occur more frequently. This happens to be one on the colder side, and the science behind why it's occurring is relatively new. It's only been in the past, I'll say between 5 and 10 years, that some climate scientists have been predicting this sort of destabilization of the polar vortex, such that we'd be having a heat wave in Greenland and an extraordinary cold snap all across the, you know, the southern United States. So this is an understood consequence of climate change, but a relatively little known one.
Myback has conducted several studies to take the temperature of Americans' attitudes about climate change.
It really isn't the case that the majority of Americans just are checked out on the issue. Most Americans are worried about it. It's just that they don't understand a lot about it. Climate change is a fairly complicated topic. I myself have been embedded with a team of climate scientists for the past 14 years, and I'm still learning. So there's a lot of complexity to it, but our research shows there's really only sort of five key facts that differentiates Americans who are concerned and who are taking action from those who aren't. You have to understand that it's real, that it's human caused, that the experts have long since come to consensus based on the evidence that human caused climate change is real, that it's bad, meaning it actually causes things to happen like are happening in Texas today. It's not just a future problem, it's a here now us problem. And you have to understand that there's hope. There are actions we can take that will make a difference.
Myback is encouraged by what the Biden administration has initiated on climate change.
Mr. Biden thus far is really surprising and delighting me at how central his response to climate change is to everything he's doing. And in part, it's because he recognizes that the four major threats to America today, one of which he's identified as climate change, the other of which are COVID and the economic crisis and structural racism, they're all interrelated. And our response to climate change can actually be a really important vehicle by which we recreate our economic system, creating good jobs that can't be outsourced. And it's also a way in which we can start to redress some of the problems that we have created through structural racism. And it's crises like the one that is occurring in Texas right now, in which it reveals most clearly the people on the bottom of the economic pyramid in our communities who are hurt first and worst from this kind of public health emergency caused by climate change.
We were speaking there with Edward Maybach, director of the Center for Climate Change Communication at George Mason University, and earlier, Jonathan Thompson, a journalist with High Country News. With more on the events that happened in Texas, here's part of this week's H2O Radio newscast, This Week in Water.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The so-called polar vortex that normally circulates cold air around the North Pole was disturbed and sent Arctic temperatures much farther south.
And the breakdown of this polar vortex was a whopper, one of the biggest, nastiest, and longest-lasting meteorologists had seen, overwhelming the Texas power grid and cutting off electricity to millions.
69 deaths were blamed on the extreme weather, including many who perished struggling to get warm. Although power was being restored, many still had no water, and millions who did were warned that it may be unsafe to drink and should be boiled.
Nearly 15 million people were affected by disruptions, and some resorted to using snow to flush toilets. At food bank and water distribution sites, lines stretched as long as a mile.
The Texas Tribune reported that systems couldn't treat or pump water without electricity, and that in some cases, reduced water pressure was caused by millions of people dripping their faucets for days so pipes wouldn't freeze.
In Houston, the Public Works Department had to slow down the water treatment process since the chemical feed lines had frozen. And in Austin, the water supply lost 325 million gallons due to burst pipes.
The crisis was not confined to Texas. In Tennessee, hundreds of thousands of people were under a boil advisory. And in Jackson, Mississippi, at one point, most of the city had no running water.
The cold weather also affected fossil fuel infrastructure as refinery equipment and pipelines froze, causing pollutants to be released into the air.
The online news site Earther analyzed reports from the Texas Department of Environmental Quality, which showed that during the week ending February 18th, polluting events occurred four times more than in other recent seven-day periods before the cold weather struck.
For example, ExxonMobil's refinery near Houston spewed 68,000 pounds of carbon monoxide over the course of 2 days as it struggled with the cold.
Sharon Wilson of Earthworks said that all oil and gas infrastructure starts with a hole in the ground, and it keeps pumping even if machinery is frozen. She said that some reports noted glitches as tiny as a frozen switch that stalled operations and forced excess gas to be released, adding that if the industry had winterized their equipment, the pollution would have been avoided.
The extreme cold also caused problems for marine wildlife in the Gulf of Mexico.
Sea turtles are cold-blooded animals that regulate their bodies by the water temperature. And when it dips below 50 degrees Fahrenheit, their heart rates slow, leaving them conscious but paralyzed.
Many turtles washed up on South Padre Island, and in response, an army of people, many of whom were struggling themselves to survive, rushed to rescue about 5,000 of the animals.
Some turtles were taken to a rescue facility, and more than 4,000 were sheltered in a nearby convention center, resting on tarps spread out on every foot of floor space, even the gift shop. When that center lost power, it was still warmer for the turtles than being in the sea.
One of those rescued weighed about 400 pounds and was at least 150 years old. It took 10 men to hoist it onto a truck.
Scientists are monitoring water temperatures so they can safely release the turtles. Without the rescue, 40 years of conservation work to protect them could have been lost.
Again, that was Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin for H2O Radio. By the way, Texas Emergency Relief Efforts, if you'd like to find out how you can help, you can find information about those organizations on KGNU's website, kgnu.org.
Support comes from Centennial Peaks Hospital, offering help for listeners or their loved ones who may be experiencing a mental health crisis. Inpatient and outpatient services are available from a medical staff of independent practitioners. ECT is available for treatment-resistant conditions. Details at centennialpeaks.com.
You're listening to KGNU, the morning magazine. It's 8:23. The first in a series of community panel discussions on race will be held via Zoom this Thursday. It's called The Roots of Today's Racial Exclusion in Boulder County and The Road Ahead. The Boulder law firm Hutchison, Black & Cook initiated the series in the wake of the killing of George Floyd and a subsequent Black Lives Matter events across the country last summer. Lucy Walker is a lawyer with the firm and says it's designed to examine racial exclusion as it has affected marginalized minority groups in Boulder.
After the murder of George Floyd last summer, it felt like it was well past time to really take a look in the mirror and see what we could do about this. Hutchinson is the oldest law firm in Boulder and probably the oldest on the Front Range, and it is a fairly progressive one at that, which, you know, many law firms are not. But Hutchinson tends to think of itself as a very forward-thinking and generally progressive firm. We're as white as Boulder is. And if we want to be a voice in and a force of good, for lack of a less flowery metaphor, in our community, we really felt like we needed to take some concrete steps. So this particular panel series is looking at the history of Boulder, but it's not all backward looking. You know, we're really hoping to start a conversation about how some of the darker and bloodier aspects of Boulder's history continue to play on in the systems that we don't recognize on a daily basis.
It was 1922 when more than 200 hooded and robed members of the Ku Klux Klan drove their automobiles down Boulder's Pearl Street. That same year, the Klan held its first initiation of members in the city. Walker says this week's panel on Thursday will address that history.
Panel one is going to address Black and African American exclusion in Boulder County, while two and three will address Native American and Hispanic Latinx exclusion, respectively. And then panel four is going to be more forward-looking under the aspirational title of What is to be Done, which is ultimately, I think, what we're hoping to do with this series, you know, to actually identify concrete steps we can take as a community to address the systems of racial bias in our home.
Outrage over the killing of 46-year-old George Floyd by Minneapolis police in 2020 created a response unlike anything we've seen in the U.S., as the difference in policing between those who are white and those who are Black could not be ignored. David Driscoll, also a lawyer with Hutchinson, Black & Cook, says that was the catalyst for the law firm to find a proactive role.
When we spoke as a firm back in June after George Floyd's murder, we thought we can't let this occasion pass. We must respond in some way. But as far as these panels go, we thought Boulder is an enormously educated and sophisticated community. But there is still room for us to cast some light here on this subject of racial exclusion. And the best way to do that is to assemble first-rate panels and let the community hear it. Let the community ask questions of these panelists. Let the community explore it, and we'll explore it with Boulder as we go.
Driscoll says the moderator for this Thursday's panel will be Dr. Quintard Taylor, Professor Emeritus of American History at the University of Washington and a specialist in Black history in the American West.
The panelists, then, will be Penfield Tate III, who is an attorney and a former Colorado state legislator. He is the son of Boulder's only Black mayor, Penfield Tate Jr. Next, we have Dr. Charles Nylon, who is a professor of environmental science at the University of Missouri and the son of Boulder's first tenured Black faculty member. And the third panelist will be Dr. Polly Bugros McLean, who is an associate professor of media studies at CU Boulder and the author of numerous works, including a work called A Legacy of Missing Pieces, The Voices of Black Women in Boulder County.
Again, that's this Thursday. It's a program via Zoom, and it is free. If you'd like to learn more or to sign up, go to the firm's website at hbcboulder.com. That's hbcboulder.com. Well, on today's Metro Show at 3 o'clock, Miriam Schiff talks to civil rights activist and minister Glenda Strong Robinson. As we continue our recognition of Black History Month, here's a preview of the show.
It's almost like water bubbling up.
Absolutely. It's like a volcano that has erupted again. It's just, I call it an underbelly. You know, it's just been sitting there. And not even dormant. There have been things that have gone on. My nephew, 40 years ago, that was stopped for speeding on the streets of Signal Hill, California, just outside of Long Beach. And he lost his life. He was murdered at the hands of police officers. This is 40 years ago. And so we're talking about George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Elijah McClain, and Ahmaud Arbery. That's happening the same sorts of things.
Again, tune in at 3 o'clock today for today's Metro Show with Miriam Schiff.
On the next alternative radio, hear Eddie Claude Jr. and Cornel West on the legacy of James Baldwin. That's Alternative Radio, Wednesday evenings at 6, right here on Community Radio, KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
Donating your car can give you good karma, because you'll be doing something great for KGNU, and you get a tax receipt for your donation. We make it easy. Call your representative, and in just a few short minutes, you'll be on your way to getting rid of your unwanted car, boat, or truck. Call toll-free 844-KGNU-CAR. Visit KGNU.org for more information.
Coming up still this morning, we will have Jim Hightower for you following the BBC update, coming up here in just a few seconds here. And then we will have the Community Affairs Program, that's a public affair with the Community Foundation Boulder County. On today's show, authors of a new national study examining Boulder County's local news and information ecosystem are being interviewed. And that should be interesting. Then, of course, at 9 o'clock every Monday, we have Counterspin, a look at fair and accuracy in reporting. Weather along the Front Range today, partly sunny skies, are high around 51. The low tonight should be 30, Tuesday a bit warmer at 53, but dropping down to 34 degrees by Wednesday, and a chance of snow, 70% chance of snow, that is. Right now we have 45 degrees outside our Boulder studios.